Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, good morning, Gulf Coast. Sunday morning, ain't it? Just like September. To turn out like this, well, it's a little hotter than we would like, maybe, and I agree, it's a little hotter. It started out wet, a little wetter than September sometimes turns out, but there's always going to be these dry spells. And I don't know about your yard, but my yard was about to burn slap up. I mean, it's one of these things that sneaks up on you. I always like to say that, I think we lose more plants in September than at any other time of year, because we're so used to the rain of Gulf summer just coming all the time. It always bails us out. If I can say the rain bails us out, it just sort of fixes things. We can depend on the rain, and then boom, you get these little dry spells, and they start, and they think, well, it's going to rain, and it doesn't rain, and then it doesn't rain, and then it doesn't rain, and these soils, they dry out pretty quickly. I hope your yard survived that dryness last week. It's getting pretty serious. Now we're going to be rescued again, as we are during hurricane summer. The reason I love hurricanes, and the reason I love hurricane summer, is we get bailed out by the tropics. And so it looks like the tropics are going to throw some rain our way this week, and that will... That will again, in that peculiar way, bail us out from this dry spell that we've been having. It's September. It's going to be trending cooler. We're going to be moving towards cooler weather very soon. The days are getting shorter. The nights are getting longer. The melaton is beginning to flower very well. We'll have lots of melaton fruit. Lots of great flowers that we haven't seen will begin appearing now, simply because the nights are getting longer. It's a peculiar part of life here. So let me tell you this story. So you've got some vegetables. You've got stuff going on in your garden. Last week we talked about raising broccoli and other things, and we talked about some of the hazards associated with it. I want to talk about that today. But, you know, to give you a little context, you're worried about your weeds. You're worried about you're worried about the bugs that are eating your plants, and we have these weird ideas about what's going on. So, you know, we see these insects attacking us. We feel like, oh my gosh, there's a shark attack. Oh my goodness, there's a snake attack. The world is attacking us. I made fun of that this past week. I said, you know, we're suffering from tree attacks. The trees are attacking us. Well, not really. And it's good to think about this sort of how we view these things that begin to bother us, because we do see them as evil and enemies, and things like fire ants. We've just got to annihilate them. They're just evil. Well, it's an interesting problem, and it may make it more difficult to control them when we think about them that way. Let me tell you this story. So I'm in the woods this past week, and I'm in this rocky area, this beautiful area, and it's not right on the coast. It's up from the coast a good bit, but there are these beautiful rocks just jutting out over me, and it's dry. It's gotten dry in this part of the state that I'm in too, just like it is has been in Mobile. And there's not much water anywhere except for this little trickle of water coming out of these rocks that are hanging over me. And just a beautiful little trickle of water. It's kind of muddy because all of these creatures have come to this little stream coming out of this rock, because it's the last bit of water around for a while. I mean, it was kind of getting worrisome, scary. So every creature in the world's coming there. And I'm looking and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, here's all these tracks, all these wonderful things that I see. And I'm with a couple of people and I'm with a couple of dogs. And I suddenly hear this shouting, step back. You know, you know what it's about. I mean, you know when you hear that shouting, you know when you hear that tone of voice, you know what's there. And I turn around and I look behind me about 10 feet, and we have stepped over repeatedly. I mean, the dogs have walked over it. The people have walked over it. There's a person leaning against the tree. There's this beautiful, incredibly beautiful, listen, get ready for it, this incredibly beautiful timber rattler, all coiled up, most beautiful colors you've ever seen, sitting right there watching us for 5 minutes. And we're all leaning against it, all walking over it, all running over it. And the idea is, oh man, this snake's going to attack us. This snake is going to, what are we going to do? And so we sat and we watched it, and we took too many pictures of it, which I think bothered it. But you know, it was just sitting there. And what was the snake doing there? Why was the snake sitting there? It's just making a living. It's just making a living. Just like the rest of us. The last thing that a good timber rattler ever wants to do is to put its mouth around a disgusting human. It just is sitting there. I mean, we could have, I don't know how many times we walked over it. It's just making a living. It just says, go away, folks. I'm just trying to make a living. I'm here by this last little bit of water. I'm not going to take anything big. I just need to make a living. There's going to be some mice that come by. There's going to be some rabbits that come by. If I'm lucky, I'm gonna grab one. Just please go away. Beautiful timber rattler. Beautiful. We just left it alone. You know, that's the way timber rattlers are. We always think of them as the enemy. We always think of them as evil. And they're just making a living. They're just making a living. That's all they want to do. Just getting by like the rest of us. So what has this got to do? What has this got to do with the rest of it? Rest of it. So, you know, we're out there. We got all these bugs. We got all these weeds. They're taking us over. We see them as coming for us. The thing we don't understand is, and the thing we should understand about these things that come for us, the weeds, the insects that begin to attack us, at least we see it that way, is that they're just making a living. They're just, in fact, they don't dislike us at all. They love us. They're just making a living. They think most of the weeds in our yard, most of the pests in our yard, they're there because they love us, because we provided the ideal habitat for them. And they think, in their own sort of weed thinking sort of way, they think, you know, gosh, this guy has made it so easy for us. This girl has made it so easy for us in this garden. They must really want us here. They must really like us here. It's fun to think about that. It's fun to think about how the creatures of the world react to us and how we react to them. And how, because we're so determined that they're out to get us, that we sometimes can't really figure out how to control them. And one of the biggest problems we have is that most of the weed and insect attacks happen, the ones that we see, happen because we provide the ideal situation for those weeds and insects to develop. One of the things we have to think about, it's one of the things I try to talk about in the lawn all the time. It's one of the things we talk about in our garden, how to understand why these weeds love us so much, why they're here, why they find it so easy to make a living in our yard, why they think we have deliberately set up an employment system for them. We're the ones giving them the job. And they think, God, I got a great boss. He's so good to me. That's what those weeds say. I got a great boss. He's really good to me. I've been thinking about that old rattlesnake that I saw, that beautiful rattlesnake, just sitting there making a living, didn't want to bite anybody, just saying, please go away. I got business to do here. Just let me do my business. Let me get by. Hey, we've got plants growing. My broccoli's coming up. I've got lots of beautiful things that are fixing to flower. The salvia is fixing to flower. It's really good. There's some bug problems. I will say we've had some bug problems. I'll tell you what I did for them. I'll tell you what you can do for them. So feel free to give us a call this morning. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. 0106, and we'll talk about how to deal with the problems you have in your garden, even including Greg Homer, who you've also employed. It's an interesting problem we have, seeing the world for what it really is, helping us to understand how it is that we change the world, and if we ever actually begin to see our role in this world and really understand it, we actually would have an easier time in our gardens. Hey, we'll be back. Let's talk about your plants. Let's talk about these hurricanes. Man, there's a bunch of them out there. I think we still could have some. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of interesting things going on this morning. Lots of things to talk about. Feel free to give us a call. I've had lots of texts. Greg's been busy this morning sending me texts of the biggest pest in his garden, Homer. And, you know, it is very interesting. Sometimes we underrate what are going to be the biggest pests in our garden. Oftentimes it's things like birds and squirrels and cats, unless you have a dog like Homer, and maybe Homer keeps the cats in check, but then Homer may have his own problems. I know a lot of us do. Hey, we've had some other texts from people. First off, I got to say, Greg is sending us a text, and I want you to see it if you can get to our Flickr page where we've got these pictures. Greg's got some beautiful pictures of specks. Of spots, of redfish that he's caught, really, which is what Greg does, you know. He's really good at that. Got some great pictures of his hummingbirds. But he also has a great picture of something I suggested you do. And it's really nice because Greg has illustrated my point in a way that I haven't been able to do. He has a picture of the bamboo technique of pulling tent worms out of trees. And it's a beautiful picture. It shows how well it works. He's very proud of his contraption. It works great. If you've got tent caterpillars, the bamboo pole with a little prong at the top just works great. We'll tell you how to make that if you need to know. But Greg's got a great picture of it. Greg, thanks for sending that picture. That's really useful. We'll use that again. So Taxman is asking me, and I think it's a good question. The collard, he's got his collard plants. He's going to put them in 5-gallon containers. I think they're going to do pretty good there. We talk a lot about what you should do if you're going to grow them in nursery containers. I like growing collards in the ground. I like it just fine. In fact, that probably is my preferred way to do it. But for some folks, it's going to be best to put them in containers. He's got them in a 80% rotten pine bark and 20% oak leaves. And so he's saying, you know, what do we need to do in terms of giving them nutrition? Well, they do, to get good leaves on that, you're probably going to need to add a little bit of nitrogen, because the soil processes that normally release nitrogen from organic matter like leaves and from pine bark, if it's in natural soil, there will be bugs and other things in there that actually release nitrogen to the plants. That's not going to happen so well in your container for a lot of reasons. So you're going to have to add extra nitrogen, more than you would if those plants were in the ground with the same soil. It's kind of weird, but it's because you don't have those soil creatures in there. So, yeah, we're going to have to add nitrogen. Taxman, you know, how you add that nitrogen is a big, interesting question. I think I would probably, the simple thing to do is to use a slow release granular fertilizer like Taxman, like you probably already have, because I know Taxman grows a lot of plants, so he's already thinking about this. So yeah, you need a good slow release fertilizer. It doesn't need excessive nitrogen. It doesn't need a huge amount of nitrogen, but it's going to need more than some shrubs do, because you're picking the leaves off all the time. So it's going to have to repair that damage. So it's going to need a little bit of extra grease, Remember, it's the sun, folks. Everybody, it's the sun that the plants use to manufacture food. That's the big one. Sun and carbon and oxygen and water. Those are the big factors. But it needs a little bit of grease for that process, and that grease is nitrogen. When you keep pulling the leaves off like that, which we do, which is what we're there to do, is to eat those collards, it just needs a little extra grease. So you're going to have to fertilize it. And in a container, it turns out that it's just easiest for me to mostly use a liquid fertilizer because I can sort of guess, have a little better guess about how quickly that that fertilizer gets used up. And so I use a liquid fertilizer about every 1 to 2 weeks. And that works fine for me. Probably about every 2 weeks would do fine. But you may use a slow-release fertilizer with pellets, and that's good too. You got the liquid. I think that's the way to go, tax man. Aunt Mary Ann up there, she's up there above Citronelle and McIntosh on the Mohwa in the Mohwa land. Aunt Mary Ann used to tell me that the only way to get good collards was to use horse manure. And she said that it changed the flavor. Now, I say this gingerly because you're going to worry about what that means, but it does. When you use a natural fertilizer, if you can use as much natural organic fertilizer as you can, it does tend to deepen the flavors more than if you just juice them, if you boost them too much with nitrogen. So if you give them too much pure nitrogen, which is chemical nitrogen, let's call it chemical nitrogen, from natural gas. If you do that, it juices the plant. It grows really well. It grows maybe excessively well, and it loses some of its flavor. But the slow release of those natural fertilizers can be very beneficial. It's harder to use a natural fertilizer like cow manure or horse manure in a container. So you're probably going to have to use some of that liquid fertilizer. But Taxman, I think the leaves help. I think the leaves help to moderate the nitrogen so that it doesn't just explode in a way that's not good for the plant. And so I think that having that leaf mold in there is going to be very beneficial. And I think adding that liquid nitrogen can help too. If you use manure, can I say something, folks? If you use manure, whether it's rabbit manure, which is great manure, it's very safe, or goat manure, which is maybe just as good, or if you use chicken manure, which is hot and you have to be a little bit careful with it, or horse manure, which is not very hot but is kind of messy to use, in cow manure, wash your plants good. Afterwards, wash the leaves good if you're doing it in containers, and particularly, do I need to say that? I hope I don't need to say that, but you do. You want to do that, okay? Is that good? So there we go. So Tony's asking, we've got a lot of questions about containers, container plants today. So Tony's got a lot of plants, he says, in containers, and he's moving them from the pots into the garden. And every time, he says, he seems to lose some. So let me talk about that, because I lost a few, too, when I transferred them. And I know why I lost them. If you're transferring plants this time of year from containers into the garden, remember that they're going from pretty protected conditions where you can watch them and you can monitor the water, and you probably don't have them in too much heat. You probably got them in a really ideal condition. They're going out into the ground, into a new territory. There's going to be some transplant shock, and it's going to come from the fact that, one, they're going to be suddenly exposed to a lot more sun than perhaps they've been exposed to before. Right, because you're moving them from one place to another. It's good to know that, Tony. If you moved them from a shady area to a sunny spot, they got a big transition because they got to get used to that. Plants aren't used to moving around. You know, they ain't got feet like we do. So they get used to being one way, and then you move them to a new place where it's more sunny, where it may be hotter or just a little bit drier, or their roots have to sort of move into a different type of soil, and they undergo transplant shock for one or all of those reasons. One of the things I do, and listen carefully, one of the important things I do when I'm smart and I remember to do it is to shade transplants that I put out this time of year. And you can shade them anyway. I mean, you can put, you can break a limb off a tree and just stick it in the ground with the leaves on it and let those leaves just shade the plant underneath it. It's an easy way to do it. I actually have some little netting that's really open that I often use to shade transplants. Now, here's the thing. I got busy this year and I didn't do that on some of my broccoli. And you know what? I lost some of my broccoli. I lost it. I watered, I was careful, but I knew I was taking that broccoli from conditions where I was really watching it. I was making sure it didn't get too hot in the sun, and I put it out in the middle of the sun, and then I didn't shade it. And that was a mistake. And you could see the leaves burn. I mean, they just weren't used to that much sun. So one of the important things to do is if you're moving a lot of some plants out, like broccoli and cabbage and collards, is if you're moving them from a shady place in containers and you're moving them into the garden, shade them just a little bit. Shade them just a little bit. It can really help. And just provide them a little bit of shade. If you're make sure that their roots are in firm contact with the soil. If you've been putting a lot of organic matter in there, the soil can be a little bit loose. Kind of press the soil down around those plants to make sure those roots are in firm contact with the soil all the way around, that the soil in the container. And then you got to water them pretty good. You need to water them pretty good. So just some things to think about. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the bug issues and how to deal with the bug issues this time of year, because they can be serious. There's no question. And we're going to talk about how to do that. And David, my good friend, who's been keeping me posted, is going to be talking about melaton squash when we come back. But we're going to take a break. You hear that? Good music.
Pick up everything before you get down. On your bending knees, I ain't going to. I dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't going to pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast sunny morning. And we have many things to talk about. Interested to hear what you've got to talk about this morning. What's going on in your yard. Let me give you this little thing. September is one of those months. Let me repeat this. And October too, when rainfall, when we can get these really hot days, and in many ways, September, under the right conditions, can be hotter than August and July. And the reason it is because we're no longer getting these local rain showers developing every day. We get this really hot weather. The Gulf keeps throwing up this humid air. And the tropical storms keep moving in. So a lot of times we'll get some extremely hot weather. We've had days 95 degrees. 95 degrees is unusual for Mobile. It's not unusual for Birmingham. But it's unusual for Mobile to have that many days at 95 degrees. And we've had a lot here lately when it's been right about 95 degrees. The night temperature stayed high and no rain. And that means your yard can get very stressed, and plants can get very stressed, and plants you're putting out as transplants can get very stressed under those conditions. That's why I'm saying you need to shade them in September. I didn't do it. I didn't do it when I put out some of my special Brazilian broccoli, and I lost some plants. I, I, I'm I'm trying my best to bring them back, but I lost some plants. And it's that transplant shock more than anything else of just having to get out into that full sun under those wild conditions that can make it difficult. So the other problem that people are having, and Dan has obliged us here by sending us a picture, a great picture that shows us what's happening to his marigolds. There's a worm on those marigolds, a caterpillar worm. And it's eating his marigold seedlings. It's been eating broccoli seedlings. It's been eating calendula seedlings. It's been eating lots of seedlings. It's the army worms. They are, you know, I always think it's going to be cabbage worms or other things. And there's a little bit of cabbage worm problems, but mostly it seems to be these army worms that are a big problem. One of the things we got to look out for or army worms this time of year. And you got a big one there. He's really going chewing into those marigolds. There are a couple of things to do. Listen to me carefully. If you've got plants in containers and the container's not too large, one of the things I do, because a lot of times these worms sort of hide in the soil. You don't see them very well. They're kind of the color of soil, and they move into the soil and then move back out, is I will take my container, if the container's not too big, and you can take an ice chest or something, just fill it, put it about half full with water, put that container in there and just submerge it and get as many of the leaves in there as possible. Just submerge it, leave it in there for about a minute. Won't hurt the plant. Actually won't hurt the plant at all. They got ways to deal with that little bit of submergence. They're going to be fine. But the caterpillars, it drives them crazy. So they're going to turn loose. A lot of them move to the top of the water. And you can see them and you can pick them off. Some of the young ones may even die after a minute or two. So that's an easy way to do it. But let me remind you, and you're going to have to pick the big ones off. Because they're going to, you just want to do that. Because they're busy eating and they're eating a lot at one time. And the best way to stop them from eating, there's only one effective way to stop them from eating right away, and that's to pick them off. So putting them in the water helps you a little bit to identify them and do that. But listen, here's another way to do it. Use BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, in the form of Dipel or Thuricide. And I don't want to, I hope I didn't use too many words like that at once. But listen, Dipel or Thuricide, it depends on how it'll go under one of those two names. I think I'm seeing it mostly sold as Thuricide now. Thuricide. It is a pesticide, but it is a pesticide that is literally a disease. It's literally a disease that affects only caterpillars. It's very safe to use. It doesn't affect humans at all. It's a bacterium that only affects caterpillars. And what you can do is you can spray that Dipel or Thuricide onto the leaves of the plant, and all of these little teeny tiny worms that you can't see, it kills them. And it takes 2 or 3 days to make sure you got a good kill and that they're infected with the disease. But it's very effective and it's very cheap. It's very easy to do. You can mix it. You get a little bottle of it. It's not that expensive. It's not expensive at all as pesticides go. And you get a little spray bottle, like a little zap bottle that, you use for cleaning. Don't use one you've already put cleaning fluids in, but a good clean, fresh one, just a little hand squeeze bottle, mix it up, put it in there. And then spray it on your little container seedlings. It really works. And you know what? Here's how bad I am. I know all this, and I didn't do it. And boy, the worms were just about to get to me, and so I had to submerge them all in water. And then I said, okay, you lazy soul, go get the Dipel and mix it up and just spray it on here, and boom. They're very happy now. So two little things to think about. We got some worm problems. Dan, there's your worm problem. You hearing me? Pick off those big ones. Get you some Dipel. It's pretty cheap. You can get it anywhere. It's or Thuricide. It's probably what it'll be called. Thuricide is probably what they're selling. Dipel or Thuricide, they're trade names for something called a bacterium called Bacillus thuringiensis. which affects only caterpillars. And you get it, and you spray it on. It really works great. Keeps them under control. You're going to have your seedlings doing just fine. Taxman backs me up on this question of do we need to shade things when we put them out this time of year? Boy, how do you do need to shade them? You probably don't need to shade them as much during. You don't need to shade them as much during the spring, but this time of year you do. I'm sorry for talking so much because I really want to get to David. David, are you still there? I'm sorry. Are you still there, David?
Hey, I'm still here.
How are you? David has got a melaton report, which is very important this time of year. Melaton, one of these great, almost forgotten fruits of the Gulf Coast that's beginning to regain some popularity. This beautiful, beautiful fruit that we can only produce here along the Gulf Coast. They can't do it in Birmingham because they're going to get frost before the fruit will develop, but it's beginning to develop here. David, tell us about melaton a little bit and tell us about how your plants are doing.
Well, you mentioned that part-forgotten type of fruit or vegetable, but it's actually also, I think, on the endangered list for the slow food movement. My plants are doing pretty good. I planted my main vine back about 8 years ago, and it's just come back. I've lost one or two that I had associated with it, but it thrives and grows throughout the springtime and summer. And yep. About this time of year, you start to see male and female flowers on the vine. And about 3 weeks or so in the fall, you'll start to get these green pear-shaped fruits hanging down there. And you might recognize them in the grocery store as chayote squash.
That's right.
And they're very popular for folks around New Orleans and Louisiana, especially at Thanksgiving and Christmas. You'll see a lot of casseroles, or they'll even be stuffed and scooped out and mixed with shrimp or crab meat or pork, and then stuffed back in the shells and baked.
Right. I haven't mastered, and I should say, it reminds me that I have not mastered the stuffing them back in the shell and baked part. I think it's something about my technique. I make a total mess of it every time. But it would be really, I have this vision of these beautiful shells intact that I'm baking. It never quite works out as nice as that. So you'll have to show me how to do that sometime.
Sure.
So melaton is great fruit, and the cool thing about it is that the fruit, it's a Caribbean plant,
right?
And you know, at one point Mobile was a Caribbean city, we thought of ourselves as Caribbean. We now think of ourselves as a suburb of Tuscaloosa or Birmingham, but it was a Caribbean city. It was an honest to goodness Caribbean city, had more interchange. Perhaps more interchange with Cuba and Dominican Republic and a lot of other Caribbean areas in Mexico than it did with areas in the interior of Alabama, and in those days New Orleans and Mobile were Caribbean cities, and so they developed a taste for this Caribbean fruit, and this Caribbean fruit does well here. It loves our humidity. Does extremely well through summer. Grows, is a perennial here. Actually survives most winters, as David's did. But it doesn't start flowering and fruiting until the days begin to shorten.
That's right.
We won't go into that. And the days, it's the nights lengthening. It senses the fact that the nights are longer. That's what it's responding to. And when it does, it starts flowering and fruiting. And it produces a ton of fruit.
Oh, yeah.
And in late
50 to 100 on them.
Yep, late October, November, December, and we just do it. Now you could pretend to do this in Birmingham, but the problem with doing it in Birmingham is, of course, they'll have a frost. They'll have a frost
right.
that last of October, middle of early in November, and it will kill the vines back, and you won't get any fruit. But
right.
We don't have our first frost until December, and so we get usually into December, and so there it is.
I was going to tell you, I sent you an email about it. I don't know when you got to take a break, but you can stop me whenever. But I was able to distribute some to other folks in the area.
Yeah.
Some seedlings, and four of them, in fact. I know three of the four have made it through the summer. And one of the people I gave one to was John Olive at the Botanical
Garden. Oh, good. And I talked to John the other day, and I didn't ask about it. What did he say? Did it do well?
He was thinking it was kind of struggling a little bit, because he hadn't seen any flowers. But then I mentioned he really wouldn't see them until now. So he went out and checked a letter, email later, saying that he had some new sprouts coming from the bottom, but he did indeed start seeing some budding.
Yeah, good.
So hopefully he's going to have a small crop there this year, at least to start with.
Great, great. Hey, David, it's great to hear about these updates.
Okay.
This is really good. You got anything else cool going on? Let's talk about it when we come back from break.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
All right.
My girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? Come on, tell me, baby.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, so let's get back to this. So, David, thanks for calling back. Sorry for that confusion. I'm glad you called back. So, David H. is really becoming our Mobile authority on traditional Gulf Coast produce, particularly the kind of produce traditions that have survived in Louisiana, even though they've been lost throughout much of the Gulf Coast. Melaton was one of those. Gagutsa is another one. Gagutsa squash that David and I have talked about earlier this year. So, David, what else did you experiment with this year, and how did it turn out?
Well, pretty much those are the only two, really. I did save one of the Gagutsas to let the seeds go. I had been trying to do that, and I just finally let one still out there on the vine as the vine's dying, just to let the seeds to harvest all those so that I'll have a supply. I'll probably have enough to share with a few folks if they're interested too. But the other thing I was going to go back to the Melitol real quick was that you know, you've mentioned before that the other thing about I talked about it also being called chayote squash, but you know, we always harp on the fact that you can't plant the ones you get at the grocery store because they're from Costa Rica or South America or Mexico.
Yep.
And they're different varieties in the Gulf Coast. So back in after Katrina, one of the professors at Tulane recognized that after all the flooding, these heirloom Louisiana melitol had a lot of these old vines had been destroyed. And so he set up an organization called melitol.org. The nonprofit to kind of re-establish those vines out in the area, and they have like an Adopt a Melitol program. And so he's been doing this for a couple of years. He's had some health issues, but he gave me a call the other day and told me that he was kicking his website back up again. And it's going to have all kind of things like how to grow it, like a 101. He did a very extensive document on that. And he's also adding a classified page, so folks who are trying to get heirloom melitol throughout the Gulf Coast will have a place to go, kind of like a Craigslist, as he was saying.
Yeah, great.
So I thought that was pretty good that he's doing that. And then the other thing he was telling me is that out there, you know, a lot of his old contacts have either gotten too old, they were older gentlemen or women to begin with, and they're unable to continue to do that. So he's established sort of a program where some of the younger folks who live but don't have the room or the space to grow it can kind of go out and help them and learn and keep those vines going as well.
Yeah. So this is really good. And so one of the things to remember is you can, if you want to experiment with melitol, it's great to experiment with them from the grocery store. If you decide, boy, I'd love to grow this myself, We're trying to reestablish, and David is trying to reestablish. John Olive's working with us at Auburn University to try to begin establishing some the seed stock, if you will, for varieties that are suitable for our part of the Gulf Coast. So I hope the Botanical Gardens, Mobile Botanical Gardens, can help us out on distributing those once we get them up. So that's really good news, David. Hey, listen, thanks for calling in and telling us about this.
All right, I'll call you back in a couple of weeks when I can have more of a count of how I'm doing.
All right, good, good. All right, thanks. Always good to hear from David. Hey, Jane is, let's see. Has Jane Ellen been Jane Ellen, I'm listening. Thank you for holding. Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you well.
Okay. I'm from Monroe County, but I was down here for the beach and heard your show, and I've been wanting to ask you about this terrible fungus I've got in my garden. It's
yeah.
a pretty good sized garden, about 50 by 50 feet, and for about the last 5 years, I've noticed spots on my green bean leaves that would make the leaves turn yellow and fall off, sometimes they turn brown, and but I was able to just, you know, keep them off and pick the green beans, and that was that. But each year it's gotten worse. And this past year with all this rain, it's just really bad. It's on my crowder peas. It's on my peppers and okra and eggplant even now. So my question is, do I need to lie fallow next year and spray copper and not mulch, or what would you recommend?
Oh, this is going to be a tough one. Jane, let me tell you what I think, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, is that what you're looking at are a bunch of different kinds of diseases. They're not all the same one. And the reason you're seeing it so bad this year is because of the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And the rain is keeping those leaves wet, and you're getting a variety of different foliar diseases. Each one's probably a little different because it's affecting a wide variety of plants. I'll also tell you that okra, you know, the plants like, and I have to take each one individually, and we may not have time this hour, but you can feel free to call me back next hour if I don't get to all of them. But like okra, my okra was incredibly productive for a long time, even in spite of the rain, because it loves humid conditions. But once it gets a little older, and once you forget to pick it a couple of times, and it gets a little stressed, and it gets a little tall, it starts losing leaves to foliar disease. It always does. And one of the ways around that is to cut the okra back. And it's probably not too late to do that in Monroe County. You might get a little more crop out of your okra. But did you have a pretty good crop of okra for a while?
No, I haven't had good okra. For some reason, I can't grow a lot of okra. Green beans I get a lot of. And my crowder peas I usually do right now. And so I've just sort of forgotten about the okra because this just...
All right, well, let's go
but
back.
So I would like to keep picking, but they're so eaten up with this stuff.
Yeah. So right. So there's my crowder peas. It's been a wet summer. It up until now, it's been very wet, very humid, and those are the conditions in which you get diseases. We're almost, I would say, we're kind of used to that in Mobile because it's always wet during summer. In Monroe County, you're probably used to having a longer season before you get those fungal diseases on the leaves. But this year, because of the frequent rain, it was going to be a big problem. I don't think those fungal diseases that you're seeing on the leaves are really, I mean, they may be there in the soil, but there may be other problems in your soil, but your soil is not the cause of those leaf diseases. Let me just put it that way.
That's good.
Yep. So it's not like you got contaminated. Well, everybody has. The diseases are always there. They're sort of waiting for the right conditions to infect the plants. And they had the right conditions this summer. Next summer, you'll probably have a normal summer from Monroe County where it probably won't rain quite so much. and the rain won't be so consistent, and then you'll complain about the drought because it's too dry and you'll have to go out and water, but you won't have the fungal diseases. So there it is. You know, my suspicion is that you have some nematode problems in your garden and some other problems that you need to deal with, and they're probably much more serious. They're things you can't see. The nematodes are little tiny creatures in the soil that can develop, that can make it very hard to grow things like okra and other plants because of their ability to attack the roots of plants. So if you pull up your plants and you got these little nodes, these little round little things on the base of your plants, they're nodules. Yep, that's nodules from nematodes. And I wish we would have time to talk about it. But I can tell you, I've got 30 seconds, which is not enough time to talk about the world of nematodes. But listen, I'm going to start out the next hour, and I'm going to tell you about how to deal with your garden, how to make it better, so it'll be more resistant to these problems. So be listening in when I come back.
Can I ask you listen one in. Quick thing? I mulch with leaves from around my homestead.
Right. Yeah, and that's good. And but now they don't let me talk anymore. We got to take a break. We got to go to news.
Okay.
Hey, but I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. I'm going to talk a little bit about how to deal with this.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Sail right round all the seven.